Welcome to this edition of the SearchCIO.com CIO Innovators podcast series on IT and business leadership. In this series, SearchCIO.com editors speak with leading enterprise CIOs about how they use technology to innovate and create positive business change.
Hi, I'm Linda Tucci, senior news writer for SearchCIO.com, speaking today with Bill Ray about technology innovation. Bill is CIO of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Rhode Island, joining the health insurance company in 2009. Before that, he was vice chairman and CIO at Citizens Financial Group, capping a 20-year career in the financial services industry. Welcome, Bill. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So before we talk about your approach to technology innovation, I have to ask you, what's a financial IT guy like you doing in the healthcare industry?
I basically solve problems for money. It doesn't matter to me whether they're technology problems or operations problems or service problems. And what I found is the things that work in financial services, for the most part, work in healthcare with a few interesting wrinkles. And in fact, in many ways, the healthcare industry can learn a lot from what other industries have had to learn to do in the way of sort of problem solving and operational excellence.
You started at the company in 2009, and just for our listeners, briefly describe what you found when you got there.
Well, my major challenge was the company had committed to sort of a massive core systems replacement project, and I had a lot of experience with major projects in my prior life. My first job was to make sure that the significant investment and effort we were putting into that was appropriately aligned with what we needed to do as a business and as a company. The project, for the most part, and this is a typical mistake many companies make, was viewed as a big IT project. And once we just installed this gigantic piece of software, everything would be wonderful. And the program management discipline around it, in many ways, had been outsourced too much to an outside vendor. So I had to do the basic project management 101 stuff of making sure we had the right governance and the right approach and the right expectations and all the other things that need to happen to make an investment of that size work. And it's been quite an effort, but the good news is we are underway. We're beginning to roll this into production, and things are in reasonably good shape. Although, like with any big project, you're always on the edge of a cliff in terms of possibilities, so we have to continue to be very cautious and disciplined as we move forward.
So you said that companies often make the mistake of looking at software as the solution to the problem. Why is it a mistake, and what's your approach?
It's a mistake because software doesn't solve problems. People solve problems. So my approach is to say, let's define the problem first. You don't define a problem as saying, I need a new database. You define a problem as saying, there's certain information I need. Here's when I need to know it. Here's the form in which I need to know it. Once I have it, here's how I'm going to use it to either accomplish, you know, a sale or to manage cost or to make a customer happy or to do something else. And if you leap to the solution of we need a new database, you can drop that database in place. But if it doesn't get the impact on your customer that you want, it's not the fault of the database. It's the fault of the problem definition and the approach to solving that problem. Mm. This is something that's gone on for years, will go on forever, which is good because it keeps guys like me employed. But technology brings us so many tools and gifts today. We've vastly underutilized their potential if we think that they alone are the answer.
When we talked before, you mentioned something about operational excellence as being really the job of IT. Can you talk about that?
I think actually a lot of times in the technology business, we get very enamored of software and tools and faster hardware and, you know, what Facebook is doing, and we forget what businesses are trying to be. And so I define operational excellence as meaning that, you know, you've got good numbers on the cost side, if that's what you're dealing with, or on the revenue side, that the people who work in a business are happy and that the people who are their customers are happy. And then finally, that you're managing risk well. So those are the sort of three dimensions, finance, satisfaction, and risk. And if you think about any business issue in those three dimensions, it really focuses you on what you need to do to solve them.
Let's talk a little bit about your bringing or doing your part for operational excellence at Blue Cross Blue Shield and talk about some of the projects you've done that you consider innovative.
The interesting IT projects to me are where we can go right to the front line, whether it's a call center agent or someone doing enrollment in Medicare, and make that process faster, better, and cheaper, so that not only the customer is happier with it, but the person actually doing the work is happy. Because if you don't have happy call center agents, they don't treat your customers well.
So, Bill, how have you identified those projects?
Well, it's wherever people are whining and complaining. So it's pretty easy. Not much more systematic than that. You go to where the problems are. And the way you do that is you talk to the people out there every day. So, and that's the call center agents. No one knows more about what's actually going on than people who answer phones for a company with people who want stuff fixed. And so if you talk to enough call center agents, you can get the Pareto 80-20 chart of things that must be fixed pretty quickly. Now, the classic IT response was, oh, we need a new call center system. Let's go find $50 million and give it to Siebel or Oracle or Pega Systems. No, by the way, those are all perfectly nice companies with good call center stuff. Or you can say, let's actually sit with the call center agent while they're answering calls. Let's watch what they do, and let's see if we can actually give them some shortcuts using interesting tools that one of the main virtues of is they're really cheap. A call center agent may be looking something up on a Pega database, and they may also have to go look something up on a mainframe. Well, you can use tools like Attachmate, which might cost like $25, and you might be able to take 30 seconds out of that call center agent's lookup time because they're not having to type things multiple times and they're not making mistakes. And they're really happy, and the customer's really happy. So it's what the projects that interest me are these iterative, incremental, just make people's lives better at work and on the phone. That and when you begin to get the aggregate of these is you start to get those operational excellence numbers. Your unit costs go down, your service levels go up, people are happier, and you're managing risk more effectively. So those are the kind of projects I really find fascinating, as opposed to the big, gigantic implementations where everyone always ends up disappointed.
So, you know, with something like your call center project, you're sort of asking your IT people to be kind of cultural anthropologists. And, you know, as far as I know, a lot of IT people are not trained to do this. So how did you pull that off?
My preference is to take a couple gifted people who understand technology but also understand people, have them sit literally side by side with, say, the person doing the Medicare enrollment, watch what they do, and then say, you know, it's taking you 20 minutes, and I know there's 2 minutes of it are because you've got to enter it in this system, then you've got to enter it the same way in this system. And then the next day, if those two system entries don't match up, the thing kicks back and you've got to do it again. What if I use some kind of a tool? So you only have to enter this once, and then it scrapes screens and it types things out, and I took 2 minutes out of your 20-minute process. And by the way, I also reduced your error rate from maybe 10% down to 10 basis points. What difference would that make? And the answer is it makes a big difference because you're taking time out of a process, you're taking errors out of a process, and also you're making that frontline clerk really, really happy because their job is simpler. And the point is the classic approach would be you collect all of these problems, you write them up, you look for one big panacea software to solve it. Mm-hmm. Instead of knocking them out one at a time, and then the aggregate effect, what we did, the aggregate effect of these little solutions was to take a 20-minute process down to a 5-minute process and to take the error rates well below 1% from the 8 to 10% where they were before. We did this at a cost almost literally of zero because the types of tools you need have a very low unit cost, and it was really just the cost of our internal programmer/therapist, you know, who was able to understand what was going on. And now everyone's happier, we're faster, we're better, we're cheaper. Our customers are happier. On every dimension, we got a win-win-win in the way I look at operational excellence.
So in doing these sort of projects that require a different way of working, an innovative way of working, who's been harder to bring along or convince, business peers or the IT people?
Typically, the biggest obstacles you face in any changes like this, and it's not just technology change, are the management teams of the area that you're trying to change, because they got to their roles essentially by succeeding in the status quo. And so they might be skeptical if you come in and say, hey, I can take your 20 minutes down to 5 minutes and spend about $47 doing it. They're going to think, no, you can't. And then the second thing they're going to think is, and if you do that, how's that going to make me look? So if you kind of create this amnesty zone where you're all in it together, and you get those frontline leaders and let them kind of be the ones helping to drive the change and the goodness and the improved results, that's how it works. But those are where the obstacles are. It's people who have succeeded in the status quo and are either unwilling or afraid to admit that you can have dramatically better performance.
I should point out to listeners that you are a West Point graduate, and I'm very curious on how your military training influences how you lead in IT.
Well, I chose the military because I had no money. And so my dad said, you can go to school wherever you want as long as you pay for it. So I turned to my uncle, Uncle Sam. I guess what I'd say I learned about the military is it's mainly about just getting the job done. It's not about who's more important and whose ego wins. It's pretty much get the mission accomplished. And to me, my mission is, we've got to achieve our financial objectives. I want to make people happy while we're doing it, and we've got to manage risk. And so instead of thinking of all the conventional ways of approaching problems, I just think about the way to solve the problem faster, better, and cheaper. So, and I would say that characterizes in many ways the kind of management culture in the military. People think it's extremely hierarchical and rigid. It's actually quite entrepreneurial, especially at the lower levels of leadership. The single most important factor in any of this is culture, is company culture. And if you're thinking about driving change toward operational excellence, if you don't lead with, making sure that that culture of excellence is there, that rewards risk-taking and rewards change agents, and you don't take a systematic, heartfelt, thorough approach to that, none of these other things will work. I mean, you can make minor progress, but culture and then the people empowered to, pursue excellence is where senior leaders need to spend most of their time. If I'm spending time thinking about whether Oracle is a better database than SQL Server or vice versa, I'm wasting what I'm being paid.
Hmm. You mentioned those managers that are hard to convince, people who are sort of wedded to the status quo. How do you keep yourself from getting mired down in the status quo? How do you sort of keep it fresh for yourself?
I mean, some of it is temperament. I'm sort of just a natural change agent myself. I don't like to get bogged down in anything, intellectually or physically or in terms of career role. But I do constantly try to keep from getting into a rut. And so probably the best way to do that is the people that are on my team who work for me, I pick ones who are, insolent in appropriate ways. the people that I really trust and work with, both peers and people who work for me, are good-natured, but they're fearless about letting me know if I'm being a jerk about something or if I'm not thinking clearly. And the other thing is I don't make a lot of decisions myself. The only things I think about with respect to decisions are the conditions right for a smart decision to be made, i.e. the right people, the right attitude, the right ethical climate. And if I know that's in place, I don't really care how people came out on the decision. And part of it is I just take on so many things that I never get bored, so I don't have a lot of time to sink into ruts.
Well, thanks again, Bill, for joining us. Thanks so much.
Good. I'm glad to be helpful, and thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this SearchCIO.com CIO podcast. For more CIO news and resources, please visit SearchCIO.com.